It's a White Coat Wednesday, so let's talk medicine. And our medical correspondent, Dr. Mitch Shulman, is here. Good morning.
Good morning to you, sir.
Perhaps not surprising, scientists identifying a link between sleep and type 2 diabetes.
Yeah, there seems to be a sweet zone for the optimal amount of sleep. They have to take a study like this with a grain of salt because they're asking people, you know, what did you eat? And then they follow them for a period of time. So there's no proof that they maintain the same type of diet or the same type of sleep or the same type of anything. But it does seem, and this supports other studies, that there seems to be a sweet zone. In other words, what we used to call in science a U-shaped curve. In English, too much sleep, not good. Too little sleep, not good. And then it's, you know, just like the Goldilocks story. And then there's the zone that's exactly right. And that zone seems to be somewhere in the ballpark of 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night. Now, it doesn't mean that, oh my God, I couldn't sleep last night. I only got 5 hours, or the next day or 2 to 3 days later, I slept for 12 hours. I'm doomed. No. We're talking over a long period of time, over years and years and years and years and years and years of follow-up. But it sort of fits. I mean, we've talked about how important sleep is. We've talked about how it affects your health. We've talked about how it affects your appetite. And don't forget, while you're sleeping, not only is your body repairing itself, not only is your mind recuperating, but there are all sorts of specific hormones that are released who have specific roles in terms of health and protecting you against disease. So it makes sense that this is something that could happen. I think it reemphasizes more than anything else how important sleep is to you. And rather than make you even more stressed out about the fact that you can't sleep, no, don't look at it that way. The intention is aim for that 7 to 8 hours of sleep. If you have the chance to get the 7 to 8 hours of sleep, don't put it off because of the other things that you're trying to get done during the day, but actually make it a priority.
Let's talk weight loss, and people who are trying to lose weight often have considerable success early on in whatever changes they've made, but then they get to this sort of floor. So tell me about that.
This is fascinating, and almost everyone listening out there, I'm sure, has had this experience where they're losing weight, and no matter what they do, they just can't seem to get any further along in the process. Why? Well, it turns out that your body has a protective mechanism, which makes sense, right? If you lose your appetite or drop down too much weight for whatever reason, you want your body to say, no, stop what you're doing. It's not good for you. It's a survival mechanism. So for most processes whereby people lose weight, after about a year, on average, there may be differences, you'll see that your drive to eat, your hunger, your appetite slowly starts to kind of reinforce itself. Not as strong as before, perhaps, but enough to keep you from making any more dramatic weight loss. The most dramatic weight loss happens immediately, and then it tends to be a more gradual process over time. It turns out one of the advantages of the GLP-1 agonists, in English, things like semaglutide, things like tirzepatide, medications that you know by the names of Ozempic and Mounjaro. Both those medications, aside from however they actually work, may actually delay that plateau by about a year. So that may be part of the reason why they're so much more effective in terms of helping you lose weight. Interestingly enough, the most effective is what we call bariatric surgery. This is special procedures that are done to help people lose weight by changing the configuration of their stomach or their intestines. The bottom line is bariatric surgery may give you the longest delay before your appetite takes over and stymies your attempts to lose more weight. It helps you hit that plateau. But I think the key message at the end of the day is you need various techniques at different times in your weight loss attempts.
Itchiness. Tell me about how this could be much more than dry skin.
Yeah, itchiness is really a problem for people. Itchiness happens for all sorts of reasons, but you have to realize it's a symptom, not a disease in and of itself. And so you have to look for the underlying cause. So in winter, it's usually a function of how dry the air is. And so we try and work on humidity, putting a humidifier perhaps in your bedroom. When you come out of the shower, maybe putting on a moisturizer. But it can be a sign of problems with your liver. It can be a problem, a sign of other things going on. Sometimes it can be an actual skin problem, like psoriasis or eczema. And so if you have itchiness, and it doesn't seem to be something caused by the dry air or something like that, you really do need to look into the cause. And once you've looked into the cause, actually go after that and treat the actual cause itself. Or else all you'll be doing is hopefully trying to deal with the symptoms, but it'll keep recurring until you deal with the underlying cause.
I am very curious about this last story. What is Ozempic face?
It's not... Really, this is one of the few times I will say it's not Ozempic's fault. Semaglutide causes you to lose weight. If you lose a lot of weight, you'll notice changes in your body, how it looks. But those changes include your face. Your face is part of your body, too. And so someone who's lost a lot of weight, especially over a very short period of time, will develop a very sort of long face because the cheek pads, little fat cheek pads, are gone and their eyes seem sunken. So the claim is if you look at a bunch of actors or people who are in the spotlight, you can see that they've been taking Ozempic because of how much weight they've lost, but also the changes in their face.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Dr. Mitch.
A pleasure. You have a great day.
Good to have you.